Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of
Too Niche. I'm Elizabeth.
I'm Lara, and today we were going to talk about Coachella fashions, but then Coachella kind of came and went. The fashions were nothing to speak of, and then we got inspired by low-key flop energy of Coachella this year to delve into kind of a trend roundup, if you will, that we are calling Q2 Trends and Beyond.
Yeah, so Coachella to me wasn't really giving me anything to speak on. It feels like it's on a definite downturn. I checked in with some friends who are on the scene. I was like, can you give me a general energy read of what the vibe was? Since I myself, I feel as if I've aged out of those types of situations a few years ago. So I heard from one friend that was giving Astroworld energy, and I asked them to please elaborate, and they said just like chaotic, crowded, which is to be expected. Others said if you were like an old pro and knew how to sort of like maneuver the Coachella of it all, that it was fun and fine. I don't know else how to say it. I just feel like Coachella has reached its Chugi era.
To me, as someone that's gone a bunch of times and then I reached my like breaking point, I would say the last time I went, which I just experienced, like I got like a VIP ticket at cost and then went and stayed, just like kind of stayed on the floor on an air mattress at like a big friend's like rental, and felt very much like it was not worth the money, and it was really difficult on my body, and it was just like, why am I paying so much money to get like death marched around the desert? I can't go back unless everything is free. And that really is the only way I see people going who inspire any sense of FOMO, is like, I know that they're going for free, they're getting an artist pass, they have to go do some sort of like promotional thing at whatever house or like branded SponCon thing is footing the bill for them. But that's such a different energy than the original energy of Coachella, which was like a rock concert.
Yeah, with like a dance tent, which always made it so fun. I think I've gone 9 times, and
work,
to be honest, only went with an artist pass. And so it's hard to do any, it's just, you can't do it any other way after that.
No.
But I thought like the fashions seemed really confusing this time around. I think if you went like jeans and a t-shirt, you were like hitting the nail on the head. Otherwise, it looked like it wasn't landing for me. I just think it's in a flop era.
Totally. And I think it's representative of like kind of our first Q2 trends and beyond hit, which is institutional flops.
That's right.
So the banks are failing / have started to fail. Like everybody knows about Silicon Valley Bank, Credit Suisse, like these major institutions are like crumbling before our very eyes. And I think Coachella is somehow very parallel to that, in the sense that the crumbling of financial institutions creates more of a wealth gap between the haves and the have-nots. So like the poor and the rich, the gap grows wider. It like eradicates the middle class. Coachella is kind of a microcosm of that, in that the only way to go that's like desirable to you or I is like artist pass or bust. VIP is like, why would you pay for that? You don't get anything extra, really. You are still going to be pushed and shoved around. It's so crowded. It's like, you might as well just be in the mix and save $900 or something. So then you're just like GA, which is good luck with your life. You don't get a rose garden, but you do get to like filter in and out of beer gardens. You spend less money, but that's very kind of representative of this like institutional flop being a harbinger of what's to come.
Also, I was just like assessing my own disinterest with it. One, I also started going in my early 20s and I'm now almost 38. So it's just like a different, I have different priorities, different things that I find to be fun. So I'm also understanding that I'm hearing, like I'm living in an energy zone of, well, it used to be fun when I, back in the day, but it was just less corporatized. You know what I mean? Like I could be at home. I don't need to be on my feet. I don't need to like be seen. I have no interest in any of these elements. And I think that social media has sort of like ruined experiences like this.
Totally. That was the sense I got the final time that I went, which I think was like 2016 or 2017. And I was just like, this feels like a fashion show. It doesn't feel like people are here to really see music or like be in the performance or enjoy it. It's more for the gram. I will shell out money to like go to a concert, and I mean every concert's fucking crazy expensive, but I would rather just do that and have like one night at like great seats at Beyonce, or like go to Taylor Swift's Eras tour with like a good seat.
Manifesting.
Or go see Lana Del Rey. Mm-hmm. Go, I like to manifest. One time I manifested a free ticket to Katy Perry's Witness tour. Like, ooh. I'm all about an experience, but at the same time, I don't like the pressure of feeling like you really have to like dress to impress on top of that, especially in an area that's like dusty as fuck. You're gonna get sweaty, you're gonna get greasy. Like, you might get a pancake dread at the nape of your neck.
Yeah. Like, people don't talk about how much walking, how much standing around, how much waiting in lines. Like, it's a lot of that, but like that's not communicated via the socials. So I'm here to speak to that. Also, just a pro tip, if anybody does perhaps have someone who's getting rid of an artist pass, they're now fabric. So bring a little sewing kit, cut that thing off of somebody, sew it back on, and you are in the game.
Why isn't everyone doing that? Would it still scan?
Yeah. I am also, by the way, my artist pass acquisition was half the time me sneaking in.
Wow.
But like always made it happen. That was always like the big part of my Coachella experiences, is like how VIP can I get? When
Baller.
You're short and okay with rolling solo like I was, could really get in anywhere.
That's a real pro tip, because I also would go, like, I went 1 year, just me and my best friend, and we like stayed in Palm Springs and took the shuttle in, and actually just like two people was so much easier, and we saw so much music that time around.
No.
It was just like, we're not going to be anything fancy. We're just going to run from stage to stage to stage and try and see as many bands as we want to. And that was a really memorable time. And then the time that I went like shelling out money, I was like, this sucks ass.
Sucks.
And also, I've been in like artist pass situations at festivals or events where it's like, my friend is the artist, so I get the pass. And that is a great, great feeling. But to pay for that would not be a great feeling.
No, it's not.
If I were an artist, I wouldn't want to see just like people that paid to be around my trailer. Like, I just want my friends and like beloved fellow like industry leaders in the section.
Exactly.
Not to be a total snob about it, but like, come on. It's like paying for a check mark.
Oof.
Which is, I think you could also put that in the Venn diagram
of institutional flops. Yes, exactly.
And I think that institutional flops are based on selling you or selling the consumer the idea that you can spend, well, with the banks, it's like they're spending all your money, but they're so in debt that they, when it comes to you wanting to take it out, they don't have your money there because they're leveraging it and like lending it out to like make more money off of your money. But that's the same type of behavior that consumers are being encouraged to spend on, which is like, you're going to spend what, $1,400? I don't know how much they are, but I'm going to say like $1,400, $1,500 on an artist pass to feel like you've achieved some certain status in life. Like you've skipped over a bunch of shit and now you're here. At the same time, you're not going to really get as fun of a vibe because you're not an artist and you're not an artist's friend, but you get the clout of like being there.
Of standing in the vicinity.
But with all that clout comes more pressure to be like, okay, now I have to get the outfit. Now I have to spend on all this stuff. And so it's like this idea of spending beyond your means and that you need to have all this kind of clout to show off, whether it's like outfits or accessories or access, instead of just being like, I'm not going to spend $1,500 on this and I'm just going to roll and enjoy.
That's right. And I think that this perfectly segues us into our next Q2 trend and beyond, which is stealth wealth.
Yeah. So obviously, I'm sure a lot of people that listen to this pod also watch Succession. And I've been really into this Instagram account. Instagram account called Succession Fashion. It's really good. They do like outfit breakdowns and they'll tag the brands that the characters are wearing on the show. And I like it just to see, A, how I like behind the scenes like styling info. And I also like to see how rich, like billionaire, ultra wealthy people present and like what they wear. And I know it's not the exact same because it is obviously made for TV, but I don't think it's that far off because it is like heritage brands, no labels. And there was also that like classic this season premiere where Tom scolded cousin Greg for bringing a date who was wearing a capacious bag that was like a Burberry print. And like that was very indicative of like this try hard, ultra, ultra wealthy people don't try hard. And that's because they're more concerned with like making money and making their money work on their behalf than spending an arm and a leg to like look a certain way or like get to a certain place. If they're at the place, they've probably been asked to be there and given something for free to be there.
So a few things, few notes, few instant thoughts. One, I've been saving Succession to watch. I actually only watch it when I'm with my parents. It's their favorite show.
Okay, that's a good bonding show.
It's nice. So I'm like, but I haven't watched it in full yet, but it's always, I just feel like I need something to look forward to in life. So that's my thing. And I'll report back when I have fully caught up. But I love this account that you turned me on to. I think it's really cool. And I think it speaks to the Money Yells, Wealth Whispers concept that has, you know, been around since the beginning of time. And I can't help, and it reminds me of like that Housewives rat race and how label focused, like forward facing label focused, most of the women are. And a few housewives that come to mind that aren't leaning in like that are like a Marisol. Like she just has great style. I know you're not on Miami, but she has great style. I know,
that's my blind spot.
Yeah. See, we both have one. We both need something to look forward to in life, and that is banking a show to get into when the rest of the zeitgeist has moved on. Goals.
Yeah.
But I see it so much in housewives culture. I think I was watching UGT recently, and Heather from Salt Lake was like, I just need to be make sure like I'm wearing all the labels, or she said something to that point, and I was just like, ew, I don't love that. I think it actually is cooler to not be, and I think that speaks to sort of a larger idea of like this quiet luxury, this stealth wealth that is sort of reigning supreme right now, at least in terms of the things that I'm liking and interested in investing in.
Totally. And I think my response to like Heather saying that she just needs to be wearing all the labels is you would.
Ooh.
Because I think that there is a definite correlation between insecurity and like label whoredom. And there is obviously like a way to do it ironically, or like, and I think we spoke on this, like the rise of the counterfeit bag as like a fashion statement. Like that's more irony, but at the same time, it is like spending likely beyond your means to achieve the same effect. But I think an argument can be made for like ironic label whoredom. But when I think of the housewives that are the flashiest, like I think of like Dorit or like Erica Jane and like people who, Jen Shah, it's all the people that are kind of scamming or like don't have the actual funds to back it up. And I don't think Dorit's scamming, but I know that she and PK have been accused of like implicated in lawsuits, yeah, or whatever, or like that they're not as rich as they say they are, which is like a common housewives trope that I love. Yeah, one of the good, an all-time surefire diss and drama is like, are you as rich as you say you are? And I think most of the time, if you have to ask, the answer is no.
Well, my favorite housewife slash I think with the best style, Radzi, Wealth Whispers, baby.
Mm-hmm.
She was never flashy. And I think by inheritance, she's one of the richest housewives. Not that I'm counting anyone's coin, but...
Yeah. But there also is like an ease and a privilege that like wealth affords you in fashion, where things can seem less try hard just because you can afford to get whatever you want or experiment more with your personal style or buy really nice things that you can feel like lived in or that you can like live in and make your own. So that's also like kind of a bummer because it's not necessarily like you can just go out and buy like one, like a pair of shoes from the row and then like your problems are solved and you have like great style. It's like more complex than that.
Would be great though if that was the answer to it all. And I've felt in my heart sometimes that maybe it would be, but
I definitely thought and acted as though it were. And I can tell you first and foremost, it's absolutely not. It's like far more complicated than just a pair of row boots. But I think that like stealth wealth is something to aspire to in terms of like conscious consumption and purchasing things that will last you a long time, that are like good quality when you're at the place where you can make those types of decisions. But also I think the other side of stealth wealth is like ties into the institutional flops. It's like being really stealthy with your wealth and not looking at like trying to project your status out into the world via your clothes or your appearance, and more just being like very stealthy with what you do with the money that you make.
Throw it in that high yield savings account,
mm-hmm,
and live your life. Just accrue. That's the goal.
I mean, I've been like, I'm starting to get like financially radicalized just because I like hired a financial planner and I'm like listening to an Audible book of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So I'm really like at the nascent stages of like this kind of understanding of money. And it's interesting because I like, one thing that really stuck with me is like, it's not how wealthy people don't, it's not about how they make their money, it's about how they keep their money. And so that's really been like, okay, like you can't, even if you think you're getting a deal, if you're still spending, you're still spending, you're not keeping. So stealth wealth is like, let it get to a point where your money and passive income is buying you a closet full of old Celine in the Row.
Also, too, I think we can look to a lot of famed rich men all had like uniform dressing. Like, it wasn't about acquiring the things and wearing them as garments or like having like a sartorial flash in any sense. It was more like, you know what? I've got things to do and my mind needs to go elsewhere. So I'm just going to like keep it as simple as possible in the clothing sense. And I'm kind of a uniform dresser, so I vibe with that a lot.
Yeah.
I'm basically Steve Jobs. You are like, have
your basics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was another harsh truth that my financial advisor and I talked about, because he's like, what are your goals? I was like, I really want a watch and like a nice car, and I want to like be able to shop and not feel stressed. And he was like, well, really, rich people don't buy things. And I was like, he really took the wind out of my sails with that one. And I'm still trying to figure out how to smooth sail through that harsh truth. But sometimes you just need to know how to be a little more stealth.
So far we've got institutional flops. We've got stealth wealth. Our next trend and beyond, I think that we should move it into the 90s.
Yeah.
With two trends that are concerning me deeply. Both found on the platform known as TikTok. The first one is water talk, which
you sent this to me and I still haven't looked at it because I can only handle so much every day.
It's a lot to take in. Essentially,
with this recent blow, water talk was just not, God said, you can't handle this. Don't look yet.
So I'm here to explain it to anybody who is feeling fear around exploring this trend. Essentially, it is, there's some like mainstays within the trend. Everybody has like a Stanley style huge tumbler for water that they fill with ice and make a concoction of their dreams. So what I found incredibly interesting around this is, what I didn't know is that a lot of these brands like Sonic or Welch's or Nerds or Skittles or Sunkist all have these flavored water packets. Like, there's this whole genre of flavored water packets that, to me, it is Crystal Light, just rebranded with more flavor options. And then there's these syrups that also are flavored, and I think they're like sugar-free and they have aspartame-free ones, and it's like a whole thing. And people will be like, today I'm doing like peach cherry jubilee or something. And so they walk you through their concoction recipe, and every day there's a water of a day, and there's a whole just genre of people sucking down these flavored, I'm calling it quote unquote water, because I think once you've added two pumps of anything to a water, it's no longer water. But
no,
I think the other thing here that has caught my eye around this trend is how mad it makes people. Like, the backlash that these seemingly just like this is just a thing that brings someone joy and that they're sharing, and the type of hate that it is conjuring up was something that really caught my eye. And I feel like that's sort of the thing I want to talk about is, yes, I'm not the water talk customer. I like we're purists. I think that's been very well documented via the Two Niche catalog. Like, we love a sparkling water, no flavor needed.
Mm-hmm. Flavors of the earth only. Thank
exactly.
you very much.
Exactly. Purified flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And oxygenated, hydrogenized, you know, those types of flavors. But I just feel like it's so interesting how, like, riled up people get over something that doesn't affect them at all. And I think that that's, like, a really interesting plot point in which we are in culture right now, is, like, how upset people are getting by what they're seeing on their screens for something that's just, like, bringing someone else joy that doesn't affect them in the least.
I'm guilty of this because I'm furious and disgusted by even the description of these water talkers and, like, what they're doing. It flares up an anger in me that's like, it's just gross to me. It's not my preferred palate or flavor profile to, like, sip on something like of syrupy water. Is like, I can't imagine anything worse. It's like cough medicine to me. That being said, I do love a vanilla Diet Coke with extra vanilla from Sonic, and I'm probably going to get one later today. But I think the important thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that these are just some ladies hydrating at the end of the day.
Exactly. But I think, are they hydrating?
That's the thing, is, like, I want them to be hydrating. And if they're hydrating, then I can release my judgment and I'll work on that moving forward. But I feel like they're not. And they're trying to say, like, that they are. But aren't you just drinking, like, cancer water?
I feel like once you're adding things to your water in that way, it's no longer water. Like, if we're looking at it in that lens of, like, quote unquote, these water recipes and science.
Mm-hmm. Science, chemistry.
Then, like, tea is a water recipe. Coffee is a water recipe. Like what?
Yeah. Are they adding caffeine? Are those little packets, are they caffeinated?
Actually would make more sense to me if they were. So I can't confirm. I've never. Also, hey, I've not tried this trend and I don't think I will. So I don't think I'm going to be designing my own little water station with syrups and packets anytime soon.
Mm-mm.
Or ever.
I'm not a packet kind of person. Well, I would, like, do a water talk if it's with, like, lemons and limes and herbs and stuff like that. Like, spa water is definitely an interest, but this sounds like the polar opposite.
When I first heard of water talk, I was like, I've found my people. This is the land. Like, we're here. And then I was like, oh no, that's not what this is at all.
Mm-mm.
Misconception. But I'm gonna give water talk a niche, but also I think the backlash is a sheesh.
Mm-hmm. You gotta let people do their disgusting things and focus on you.
Yeah. Takeaway.
But that brings us to a thing that I really can't release, and I don't understand people who like it, which is cottage cheese.
Ugh.
Is making a huge comeback.
I hate this one. Because here's one thing. I don't think the water recipes smell bad, but I do know that cottage cheese smells horrific.
My dark truth is that I used to love cottage cheese. When I discovered it, I was probably maybe like 8 years old or 9 years old. And I was like, this is the best thing that's ever been invented. Like, I would eat bowls of cottage cheese, like plain, nothing in it, just like cottage cheese head. Then years and years passed, and I was in a dark place looking at, like, pro Anna tumblers. And then I saw that all these girls on Tumblr were like, they loved cottage cheese. And it was like pro Anna ballerinas. Like, all they ate was like cottage cheese. So I was like, well, good thing I love cottage cheese. Time to get back on that old horse. And I got a big thing of it. And I made myself a little bowl. I took one bite and literally like gagged in my mouth, had to spit it out in the trash and was like, I can never go back. Like it, I could not do it.
White food is just not palatable to me. And my two things that are, and I know other people like this, but this is just for me, my two most disgusting things in the white food family are ranch dressing and cottage cheese. Those are both like, it can't be near me without, like, it can't be anywhere near the food I'm trying to eat or else I won't, I can't
eat. I know many people like you.
Yeah. It's a, it's a.
For a full, like, no cream cheese, no mayo, no ranch. Absolutely not cottage cheese.
Cottage cheese is like reigns supreme as the number one because it's curdled and it's white.
Yeah, I'm not a curdle. I don't like a curd. I'm not a curdler.
So where Water Talk to me is evoking like Crystal Light packets of the early 90s, cottage cheese too is coming back around in the same way where I'm just wondering like why.
Both feel very like low fat 90s craze to me and kind of in the same way that like the Olietto from Starbucks is like a new thing in Los Angeles, but like some of the news that's come out about it has been that it causes a full blown like diarrhea attack on its drinkers. But that is not dissimilar from, remember Olestra?
Yes, the oil and the chips that was giving people bad tummies.
Mm-hmm. These are all connected.
Everybody's just trying to like release.
They really are. It's the cottage cheese, Water Talk, Olietto, Ozempic, Venn diagram. Something is up.
Trend.
Scary. I won't be partaking in any of that.
No, but like maybe is the cottage cheese speaking to like the peasant era a little bit?
I don't know what it can't be a good sign. That's all I know is that it's very like gruel vibes, but it's, I would rather have gruel.
I don't think gruel is traditionally
white. And water and yeah, that's like a brown oats like and some dirt. It's just kind of whatever you could scoop up and mash together and boil. That is way more delightful to me than a mouthful of curdled.
Yeah, no, I can't. Like, I cannot do with this trend at all. And some chefs that I like to check out, their home cooks or whatever category you want to throw them in, whose content I really like, when they get the cottage cheese out, I'm like, we're scrolling right past that. We're not doing that.
What are they doing with it?
There's this woman I follow, Baked by Melissa. She's a very popular, she used to have like those cupcakes in New York. I think she still does. She has cookbooks, like the whole deal. And she has like a nice little food centric TikTok that I'll peruse. She makes this like cucumber salad where she chops up cucumbers really fine and adds dill and I think red onions and like olive oil. It's good. It's like a nice concoction. But she puts that on top of the cottage cheese and then I'm like, nope, can't do that. Sorry. Not trying to yuck anyone's yum, but that's a no.
Once you've seen the truth about cottage cheese and felt that truth in your mouth, like nothing will ever, it will never come back.
I remember in the 90s, my mom used to put canned peaches on top of the cottage cheese.
Cottage cheese was just like the precursor to Greek yogurt. Essentially.
Yeah, but Greek yogurt isn't chunky.
It's a texture thing for me. It's like I can't, I'm all about like a smooth, I like a smooth texture, but like a, I think a white chunky texture is hard.
It can't.
Even honestly a brown chunky, like tapioca balls are disgusting to me.
No
I
chunkies.
Don't understand why anyone would like that.
It's a chunky no free zone in my palate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, where do we go from here? We're just gonna have to go the opposite of chunk, I think.
Yeah,
which is gas. Yeah,
it really is. Wow, that was a beautiful entree into the next trend.
So I think that gases have been trending for a while, but it's like there's more gases are being added to like the gas trend. So like people, and by people I mean like celebrities and the ultra rich, were doing these oxygen tanks for a while. I think we saw Justin Bieber zip himself into oxygen tank. Marc Jacobs laid in one after he got a facelift and it helped him heal. That is like kind of the first instance of seeing this like gas trend emerge into kind of like the public sphere. But now, as we covered, like hydrogen water and like adding hydrogen gas to your water, I think is a trend that we're going to hear more about over the next few years. But I saw a personal trainer that I follow on Instagram zipping himself into a suit that billows out. It fills up with carbon dioxide and you sit in a billowy suit of carbon dioxide gas. And I was like, I've never needed something more in my life than to be in like a Teletubby-esque suit of CO2.
Yeah, it's like a Missy Elliott style suit of CO2.
Missy Elliott.
What does it do?
I don't know. I didn't even ask any more questions. I was just like, gotta get that. Yeah. Let's see. Because I always thought carbon dioxide was bad.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think that I was confusing it with carbon monoxide. And so let's see. Okay, CO2. CO2 health effects and benefits for the human body are innumerable. Life originated and has existed on Earth for millennia under conditions of very high carbon dioxide content of the surrounding air. Carbon dioxide was up about 7 to 12% in the air when the first creatures with lungs were evolving. So the main CO2 health effects are vasodilation, which is the expansion of arteries and arterioles. As physiological studies found, hypocapnia, low CO2 concentration in the arterial blood, constricts blood vessels and leads to decreased perfusion of all vital organs. So I imagine that your skin is the largest organ. If you're zipped up in this like Teletubby suit, blasting yourself with CO2, it's absorbing through the skin and helping your arteries expand, which causes like more blood
oxygen.
Flow and like more just like vascular blood flow, which is really good for sports recovery. You want to be getting like blood flow to all the areas of your body, especially if you've just like worked out hard. Another benefit, the Bohr effect, was described in 1904 by Danish physiologist Christian Bohr. This law can be found in modern medical textbooks on physiology. The Bohr effect states that arterial hypocapnia will cause reduced oxygen release in tissue capillaries.
So it's essentially like a hyperbaric oxygen therapy type thing, but with CO2.
Yeah.
Which I have not tried, really want to try. It's on my list.
It helps with free radicals, antioxidant defenses, and helps with like inflammatory responses, nerve stabilization. I guess like carbon dioxide has a calming or sedative effect on nerve cells. But the good news is, I believe that you can just get a lot of CO2 by deep breathing.
Turns out.
Mm-hmm. So, but there's, I guess, a ton of, it's healing for lung damage. Wow. I've got to get a CO2 suit.
I know. I think you need
today.
A boots on the ground, suit up, report back.
The good news is I'm friends with the personal trainer that I follow. Shout out Josh Holland. And he's a real trailblazer in this space. So I feel confident that within the next year-ish, I'll probably be a Teletubby in no time.
Speaking of just like suits we put on, I recently had a gathering over and friends of mine brought their like compression pants for lymphatic drainage. Let me tell you, nothing pumps a party up more than when you bust those things out and everybody just gets a little boost of circulation, lymphatic drainage, taking turns, It was a big pleaser.
An A plus?
Yeah, major.
Yeah. I've accumulated a good chunk of credit card points and have been really deciding what I'm going to try, like, can convert them to a gift card for. And at the top of my list, like, it's really competing are like the new Apple headphones or the Therabody compression boots. And I feel like that just bumped the compression boots up to spot number one on the list.
Honestly, I vote compression boots.
And I think also just taking care of your body or like doing things that help your body relax and recover. And like, I mean, that's not like a new trend by any stretch of the imagination, but that's more important now than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
As we head into mass institutional flop era.
Get ready.
You've got to be like just making sure that your arteries are open and flowing and you're like limiting stress. And I say this mostly for elder millennials as we age into midlife.
Such as us.
Such as you and I. Yeah.
So gases, so hot right now.
What new gases will come into the mix? I can't wait to see and try them all. The Venn diagram next is the idea of cluttercore, trash island, and living in one's peasant era. And I feel like those are all connected. They're micro and trends that connect and create like a macro trend.
Yeah. So cluttercore,
speak on it,
isn't necessarily new. So I first got wind of this in May of 22. Arc Digest did a little write-up on cluttercore being the chaotic good that we need right now. So cluttercore is an aesthetic that is focused on individuality and creating a space that tells a story. Unlike maximalism, cluttercore does not rely on themes in order to bring a space together. So it's really more of like an all over the place, hence the word clutter. Whereas I think maximalism is more intentional. But then it goes further into like the messy girl aesthetic, which is also very much trending at the moment, for better or for worse. And I think like the best example of that is our queen, Julia Fox.
Totally. But I even want to take it back further and shout out kind of someone that was at the head of this movement.
Ooh.
Caroline Calloway. Queen of clutter. That apartment, I think we can all agree, has haunted us into present day. To know her is to know that she loves to surround herself with clutter. It's semi-intentional.
I think Julia Fox takes it to a place of like reality. Like we're all are living
just like whatever
on this planet and just trying
whatever
to like do our best, and sometimes our home, our ground zero, isn't organized. And I feel like I'm messy girl aesthetic like half of the week. But then like the other half of the week, I'm like at my Marie Kondo greatest. And that cycle is what keeps me alive and keeps my motor running. Like I truly think I have a disorder in which I have to sort of like mess things up in order to know that I can go back to organizing it. And it just like keeps me on track with my existence.
That's nice. It's
kind of my biorhythm
or something like that. I like a messy corner, or like a corner where a stack happens, a pile, but then like the urge to just like hide the pile somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
The piles are hidden, but I don't like clutter at all. Like really stresses me out, and nothing has been made that more apparent than like being at home. And my mom had like a lot of clutter in my room, like all these picture frames from when she moved that were just stacked in the one bedroom in her house. And I was like, I have to move these out. Like I can't like live with like just picture frames stacked in the wall. Like it has to just go. So I'm realizing that I really can't. I appreciate people who can clutter core to their heart's content, but I'm more of a
clean core,
organized core.
Next trend.
Clean core.
I do think though, like the clutter core chaos girl vibe is what I like about it is it feels like the antithesis to that like Instagram aesthetic, like influencer girly, like everything is pink and organized and I am just living my best matcha life. Like we're done with that. If we were ever there, I don't know if we were ever there. I think it was always a bit of a side eye, but I appreciate cluttercore, although like it speaks to my personal form of mental illness. I also appreciate the acknowledgement of that like things are messy in the world and in our lives and in our homes, and to strive for like quote unquote perfection within aesthetic is like unattainable. And I think the sooner we realize that as a society, we'll all feel a lot better about ourselves.
Amen. Very well said. Yeah, I think again, it kind of goes back to living within your means and not striving for these markers for what society considers to be like markers of success and status, and just being like, I'm happy in my space. I'm being stealthy with my wealth, and I'm like not gonna go out of my way to try and like put a Band-Aid on this thing that's actually not even a problem in the first place.
Amen.
How can even one compete with the ultimate queen of cluttercore that is Trash Island?
She is mother.
She is mother to us all. And Trash Island grows and grows every day. And it's now come out that Trash Island has developed its own living ecosystem. So,
like, I'm ready to invest.
I feel like the monetization of Trash Island is not far away. I'm also like, why hasn't anyone just said, like, I'm going to clean this up?
Posting up there and
just being like, look, I have $65 billion. Here's $1 billion to clean up Trash Island. How expensive can it really be? You just like get a boat out there and.
But like, what does one do? I don't have like enough. Though it is a consistent reference in my heart and mind, I don't have enough like tangible facts around Trash Island in terms of like what would need to be done in order to even attempt to eradicate it or fix it.
So Trash Island is the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, and it's like all the garbage that ends up in the ocean due to like the swirls and currents of the ocean. It just like congregates into two, I think there's two actually huge patches.
Oh, it's like Atlantis.
Yeah. So there's like a western one and an eastern one. And so they just like,
it's Dubai.
It's totally. There's just all sorts of stuff. Well, can't someone just go like whale technology vibes and just like open some sort of machine's mouth, scoop it all up, and then just like strain out?
There's an idea. Remember how like in sixth grade, everybody would go to Washington, D.C.?
Mm-hmm.
I think now there should be mandatory sixth grade trip to Trash Island to see where it all ends up. So you can start really taking a good hard look at your consumption behaviors from a young age. The money that is then made from hosting these field trips can then go to some sort of cleanup action plan.
I love that. I would like to just point out the risks involved with carting children into the middle of the ocean. Though I do think if we can do that safely, it's worth it. And I think maybe we could target rich children or rich parents first on a luxury
Absolutely.
Cruise to Trash Island.
Go for the stealth wealthies first.
Because mm-hmm. they're the ones that really
and
have
trickle down
the means to clean this up. And like, let's like turn it into an entrepreneur type of vibe.
Yeah, like maybe there can be then some sort of like end of semester class project of like, what is this class going to do to make their dent in TI?
Just for reference, it's also a 620,000 square mile of trash. So I guess it is like a slightly more complicated. I guess I just thought that it was like a mile.
It's an island.
But no, it's not even like 620 miles. It's 620,000 square miles. That's a lot. That stresses
it's
me
a
out.
Lot.
I'm going to need those compression boots. Stat.
Right now.
Yeah, so Trash Island's trending. They just discovered that there's a whole ecosystem of displaced like crabs and all sorts of anemones and sea creatures that were discovered to be living and procreating on Trash Island. They're like thousands of miles away from their own natural habitats, but they've said, you know what? We're just going to do it up. And now they're living there.
So let's all just think about that.
I think that brings us to kind of a next trend, which I think works well for us, but also is just like an interesting thing I saw, which is communities gathering around niche interests. So Lana Del Rey pulled out of Coachella and then she performed at like a low-key music festival that looked really fun and chill. And that's what made me start to think like, I mean, I think it is, has been an emerging trend for a while where people are so like niche famous now, or like you can have a whole career and like success and people like your audience can know who you are, but like the rest of the world might not know anything about you, like niche celebrity, etc. But I just saw that and I was like, okay, this ties in somehow with all the rest.
I'm big into that concept. I think I've said on the show before, so I lead like artist sway groups. And I feel like that's my niche interest of like getting people to tap into creativity in whatever specific form that looks like to them, and like bringing them together under the guise of this one 12-week experience and like to prosper from there. That is like what excites me. And that feels niche.
That's very niche. I like to have people gather around the Vanderpump Rules interest, which I guess is not so niche anymore given the scandal of it all. But for a while, we were niche as gold.
Nichey niche.
Yeah.
And it's, if you get that reference, that's niche.
You're a real head. Yeah.
And I think in our trend predictions episode that we did at the beginning of the year, one of the things that I had touched on was I think that like there's so many trends that were almost like it almost cancels one another out to being like a landscape of trendlessness, because it's just so nicheable. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. And I think the way that we structured even this like trend prediction, Q2 trends and beyond, is like thinking of trends more as existing in like a Venn diagram and like how they're all connected to each other. And then what does that mean?
Yeah.
For future.
It's almost as if we're seniors in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And this was our analysis report.
Yeah.
For like an AP class.
Mm-hmm. Also, like companies would pay good money for, I feel like, what we just gave everyone for free. But that's the genius of Too Niche.
It is. Okay, so let's close this out. What's like one thing that you have been using lately or bought lately or have been doing lately that's just like niching your soul?
I feel like I've been in a real place of sheesh since I suffered from potentially one of the worst haircuts of my life. And I'm just trying to bounce back from that every day and stay strong. So right now I'm just all about taking hair vitamins, like my Hum Nutrition gummies, and just like willing my hair to grow. And I also am going to try this thing that is that I saw on YouTube and people said it really worked. It's where you put like a little bit of oil in your on your fingertips. You lay upside down over the edge of a bed and then you just massage your scalp for 4 minutes. And you do that every day for a week. And then you take like a few weeks off. And then you do that every day for a week. And then you take a few weeks off. And it's supposed to make your hair grow an inch in 1 week.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm all about, I'm stimulating follicles, etc.
That sounds great. I think your haircut looks awesome, but specific to one's own head journey. So my opinion doesn't matter. When it comes to that.
I appreciate that, though.
But I wouldn't have said, ooh, sheesh. I would have said, niche.
Mm-hmm.
For me, because I just got this, I've been waiting for it to be back in stock from a brand that I've been a longtime fan of for Sigmatic, which is like functional mushroom blends. They do like a really nice instant coffee, matcha, chais, like all of that. Get on board if you haven't tried it. They're wonderful. But they have this Focus blend that's been out of stock forever, and it just came back to my doorstep. And it's got lion's mane, cordyceps, bacopa, maniri, which I've never heard of, rhodiola, cacao powder, B12, and blueberry. And it is, I am riding high. And it's just like a little powder you could add to tea. I added it to like a peak tea, which is like those instant tea crystals, caffeine free.
You did your water. This is your water.
This is my
talk.
Water talk, guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then two pump. No, I'm kidding. it's so good. And I have to tell you, I had some last night before my artist wig group. And then I like proceeded to tackle all of my clutter core piles that had been building up and yelling at me for the past week to handle. So something's in that concoction that's working.
I love that. And then does it jack you up for hours, or is it easy
no
to just
caffeine.
Like relax?
I think if you mix it with like a matcha or a coffee, you might feel like a little bit more wired. But since it was more of like a late afternoon experiment, it was great. And okay, I went to sleep perfectly.
Well, we'll link that in the episode description.
Yeah.
And I'll link my hair gummies, and I would take any other hair growth tips that you all listeners may have. And yeah, I think until next time.
Stay niche. Thank you guys so much for joining us. And oh, I just wanted to say really quickly, on our Instagram, we had asked some listeners some suggestions for hauls, and you guys delivered some incredible, incredible suggestions. So we're really excited to keep on hauling.
Yeah, the hauls are nigh. So stay tuned.
All right, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Too Niche is created and hosted by Laura Marie Shanehalls and me, Elizabeth Cott.
Today's episode was edited by AJ Mosley. If you love today's episode, please give us a 5-star A+ rating in Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast audio. And be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And be sure to smash the follow on Instagram and TikTok at this_is_too_niche.
One of my favorite big ticket investment items is from Higher Dose. From infrared sauna blankets to PEMF mats, their science-backed tech helps you sweat and recharge and glow like never before. I am such a fan. I truly lie on my PEMF mat every night. I also love my sauna blanket. They are just incredible items. And because you're a Too Niche listener, you get 15% off your order with code NICHE15 at checkout. So head over to higherdose.com, use code NICHE15, and elevate your wellness routine today.